So in the first half of the show, we were joined by Bill Nottingham, principal at the innovation firm Nottingham Spurk, who's going to join us for the second half of the hour. And we're going to be we'll also be talking with Brent Bushnell. Brent is CEO of a company, 2Bit Circus, and he's going to tell us about what his firm does. Brent, welcome to Innovation Navigation.
Hi, folks. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So 2Bit Circus, tell us a little bit about the company and what you're trying to do.
Yeah. So we're literally a high-tech circus. If you think about what Cirque du Soleil did for the traditional circus of removing the animals and making the spectacle all about the humans, we're removing a lot of the humans and making the spectacle all about the technology. Get people together playing in fun new ways. And, a lot of out-of-home entertainment hasn't changed for a long time. And so we want to bring lasers, fire, and robots and reimagine out-of-home entertainment.
Lasers, fire, and robots. I'm in. What you and our in-studio guest, Bill Nottingham, have in common is that you have very prolific inventors as fathers. That your father is Nolan Bushnell, creator of Pong and Chuck E. Cheese, and just one of the U.S.'s great innovators. And I'm interested in both from you and from Bill, but let's start with you, Brent. How did your childhood with a father that invented all these things affect your career choices?
Well, I mean, I really had a terrible childhood.
Did Fry's Electronics have a daycare center?
Well, it's so funny. Dad is not a sports fan, so he didn't really raise us as sports fans. And so, no joke, Friday or Saturdays and Sundays with Dad was Fry's Electronics and eating ramen noodles.
That's great.
So, I don't know what sport it is people watch on Sundays, but we never really learned. But it was really actually a lot of fun. I mean, Dad's still a big kid, and he raised us. He was trained as an engineer, but has been an entrepreneur his whole life, and really raised us with sort of one foot in each of those camps. So let's take these things apart. Let's build new stuff. But then also, like, what are the economics of this restaurant? What are the economics of this business? Like, how do we, really exploring the sort of business side of things? And I really liked thinking about both of those. And then myself went on to study engineering, and then have been an entrepreneur ever since.
And Bill, your father was an inventor. How did that affect your childhood and your career choices?
Much like Brent, my father, he also showed us, he taught us by showing. And so he would bring home prototypes. At the time, one of our first clients was Little Tykes, and he'd bring home these prototypes that we thought were real. And then we would be devastated. We'd take them back to the shop, because they had to go build it. So it was funny. We were like the constant test mules for everything. And we were so freaked out because they wanted the toy back.
Right? It's my toy.
God, Bill, we had such a similar experience with that. I mean, that is just so nuts. But we actually, funny enough, played very little Atari because, frankly, he was always bringing home this new stuff that we were like, why are we going to play that old stuff? Like, let's play all the new stuff. Prototypes coming in and then going right out the door. That's the only one that exists in the world. That's awesome.
Do you guys need to talk? Do you need some support? I mean, I get this image of your fathers both yanking your toys out of your hands and asking for his toys back.
It's a joke. That's 10 years on the couch right there.
It's funny. When they take those away, it makes you want to feel like, well, hey, wait a second. I'm going to build my own toy. And that's kind of what we're doing now. And I think, much like Brent, we're inspired by them. But then we also want to show that we can do things as well. And I think it's that back and forth that's really exciting.
So, Brent, you've gone a different direction, whereas Bill and his father and their firm, Nottingham Spurk, are creating these amazing products. You are more about experiences. You were one of the first companies to create an escape room. And explain escape rooms first to people and where you've gone with that concept.
We definitely love novel experiences. And really perceive that there to be a big sort of macro trend around people wanting novel life experience, and so really excited about that. Escape rooms, if you haven't tried one, are a ton of fun. There's probably 3,000 of them operating worldwide now. They've really taken off in the last few years. And when my co-founder and I first met, we started, we just wanted to make a live-action video game where you're the character. And so if you think about, like, Michael Douglas in the movie The Game, you know, where that game is sort of overlaid on all of San Francisco, and he's, like, having to use all his faculties in order to be able to solve what's going on. And so in these, in the escape room instance, you're locked in a room, and the room is going to have like a bunch of puzzles and furniture and whatever, and you have 1 hour to escape from the room. And basically that just means finding the key to unlock the door, but the key is going to be buried inside of a safe, and you can't get the code to the safe until you've figured out this other puzzle, and it's sort of this nested a series of puzzles. When we started playing around with this style of entertainment, escape rooms didn't exist, and so it was a little goofy because we'd be like, hey, you want to come and do this thing? It's this live-action adventure, and people would scratch their head and be like, you mean like an iPad app? And we're like, no, it's a real thing. You go to a place, and it was so challenging to convey the concept. And then as escape rooms started to really take off, we could say it's like an escape room, and be like, oh, got it, okay. So, but it's fun to see those really taking off now. And we just installed one in Dave and Buster's in Northern California. And in ours, rather than escaping the room, you are collaborating with a bunch of friends, and you happen to be on a starship, and you're space squad, so you're sort of a bumbling group, and you're trying to not crash into a planet.
So have you moved beyond the concept of escape rooms? Is this turning into something bigger and broader than that?
Yeah, so we look at escape rooms as sort of a subset of a larger category of entertainment we call story rooms. And the idea is what happens if the story is not about escaping the room and you want to do something with, for Barbie or NASCAR or frankly, a sci-fi adventure. And so in ours, you have got about 30 minutes to go through this, sort of explore this narrative. And, you're on the bridge of this starship, and oh my God, life support just failed. Bill, we need your help. Fix that thing. Oh my gosh, Dave, we don't actually know where we're going. Do you mind like taking over navigation? And so we're all going to have to collaborate in order to be able to like unlock this, unlock the adventure.
What I find fascinating with some of the things you're telling me is you're actually putting the power back into the player. And, it's almost like giving you a way to live this fantasy, but it's with real things. And that's what I find fascinating. It's like, you really give people the ability to not even, it doesn't have to be like the joystick, or you have all these functionalities you need to know and be really good at. It's just using your own wits about you. And that's what I find fascinating with some of these things you're talking about.
Wow, Bill. Well, yeah. Well, for us, you think about the arc of the evolution of entertainment. It's been about increasing your immersion. From a book, you're doing all the imagining, and but you're a passive observer. A movie, some of the imagining has been done for you, but again, you're a passive observer. A video game gives you some control, but usually just with your thumbs. Recently you can dance in front of a Kinect or, use a Wii and move your arms around, but you're still sort of tethered to that screen. What happens after that? There's a lot of folks super excited about VR, and we definitely think VR is cool. I've done a lot of work in that space. You really do a lot of work to kind of recreate body movement and emotion, and there's sort of a lot of sensors and whatnot in order to be able to make that happen. Well, what happens if the highest resolution thing is real life, right? That's as good as it gets. And so how can we make games and entertainment experiences that allow you to plow, dive into another narrative and not be, as you said, not be your, take on a new role, but have it be your, involving your whole body.
We're talking with Brent Bushnell. He's CEO of 2-Bit Circus. And if you have a question about how to create a really compelling and entertaining experience, give us a call at 844-WHARTON. That's 844-942-7866. So, Brent, you're also starting to do these things for companies, right? You're starting to create stories that would illustrate some point that a company wants to get across or help enhance that company's brand. How does your business model for that work?
So, you know, this space adventure we did with Dave and Buster's, we just made up that story, you know, about Space Squad. But for CW, to help them launch The Flash, we did a version of this built into a truck that they toured around to Las Vegas and L.A. and whatnot, where you got to feel what it was like to be a superhero. So for that particular case, we collaborated with them to build that. They paid us a flat fee. And for us, we were really getting to used to these tools, and so it was sort of a paid R&D project for us. Going forward, as we end up with more of these out there, there'll be a collaboration for both paying to skin it with that IP, but then we'll do a revenue share for the ticket sales.
I think you keyed in something really interesting. I think that, you know, businesses are constantly trying to find ways to get outside themselves and disrupt themselves, and maybe them being a part of some of these experiences will get them to work better as a team and also get them to kind of step back from the day-to-day grudge of a job and, you know, really learn how to work as a team. Have you done something like that, almost like these interactive video game, like brainstorm conversion, kind of like, you know, weekend trips for a company?
Absolutely. You nailed it. In fact, today we have 50 people from Comcast coming through our experience as a team building exercise. And so it's really a natural fit for groups to, you know, either groups of friends or groups of people on a team in a company to get together and sort of explore new ways of collaborating and communicating in the backdrop of something that's a lot of fun.
You're also starting to use this as a way of teaching science and technology, engineering, arts and math to kids, right? How do you build an experience that's a learning experience?
Well, so you think about the kinds of stories you can put in this, and they can be strictly entertainment, or you can have, you know, other threads that you weave in there, and other narratives. And, you know, I think back to my favorite ways to learn were always in context, you know, not rote memorization, but you're working on a project, you're doing something very again, involving as many of your faculties. And so, you know, it's one thing to just sort of learn about chemistry in isolation and physics in isolation. It would be another to have to, like, you know, be called in to fix the reactor, you know, and over the course of going and fixing the reactor, even if you don't know anything about those things, you're sort of given just in time information for, you know, being able to get you through the process. So now you're you know, in this environment, and it's made more real. You know, you think about our, you know, the way humans are, we're big memory machines. And so the more we can give you a life experience that you know is more in line with the way that you've done your learning in the past, the better you'll remember it.
And, you know, as you're talking, Brent, I can see the gears turning in Bill's head. Bill, how do you see this kind of experience being translated into the companies you work for?
Well, I can see lots of ways. I think, you know, one of the things that's fascinating about me is, you know, in Brent's world, there are literally no rules because technology can create a whole new dimension.
So true.
And so I think when you start to think about that, you know, we go into brainstorm sessions and we think there are no bad ideas. And it's amazing how many companies create those rules, those boxes, and they can't get out of their own way. And it's amazing to, you know, Brent and I'm sure Brent would agree, is we don't know a world that really has rules like that. I mean, so we're in this common language, but it's amazing how so many people have this this ability where they can't get out of their own way. And I think when you start to think about, what if I could literally just have no rules and open it up, anything can truly be possible. And once you start to realize that, you can create whatever you want. And it's interesting. It's all about your own mindset.
And gosh, you know, Bill, I just love where you're going. There's a fascinating talk by John Cleese from you know, Monty Python fame. It's called On Creativity, and I encourage all of you to check this out. It's really wonderful and whimsical. But he has as part of it, he talks about intermediate impossibles, and you know, they're really this like jumping point, this bridge from, you know, sort of the normal and the established to something crazy and ridiculous as a concept, and that is as a stepping stone to then some real innovation. You know, innovation by its very nature does not exist yet. That thing is counterculture, counter the establishment, counter the normal, established thinking. And so you kind of have to get out of your own way in order to be able to, come up with something new.
So Brent, you're always thinking, I'm sure, about how to make really compelling experiences and what's going to surprise and delight the people that go through those experiences. But the other half of it is the technology for the kinds of things that you're experimenting with is changing so fast. I mean, you know, the Oculus Rift came out, and there's a bill just brought into the studio today, this amazing 360-degree camera. I mean, the tools out there are incredible and changing incredibly fast. How do you keep your firm up to date on the latest? And also, how do you prove it out so that, you know, one of the things that can't happen is when you want to create a really immersive experience, if the technology is kind of buggy and rebooting all the time, that ruins everything. How do you prove something out so that it's actually going to work reliably?
Yeah, all great questions. You know, well, part of our early inspiration for my co-founder Eric and I was, you know, there's all this great new tech and it hasn't been applied to entertainment, out-of-home entertainment. You know, I mean, you think about some of the last major, you know, out-of-home entertainment innovations, and it was like laser tag, mini golf. You know, I mean, these things are really not the height of technology. But meanwhile, we've got computer vision and cheap sensors and, you know, and as you mentioned, virtual reality. And, not only do we have access to that stuff, but a lot of it is way easier to use than it's ever been. You know, I mean, you can do really meaningful computer vision projects now in a weekend. So there's that arc of the tools are getting powerful and much simpler. You know, VR is not new. It was here in the 90s. But at the time, content production was tough and difficult and expensive. The hardware itself, like more people got sick than now. That stuff was also super expensive. So everything was hard to use. Now that stuff is getting so much easier. The 360 cameras, if you're going to be doing, you know, live action, the animation tools, you can literally publish right from Unity. And so that stuff's really getting to be a lot more, accessible and possible. As far as how we stay up to date as a firm, man, that is an active process. I have one thing I just absolutely love to do, which is conference crash. and the idea here is go to random conferences, like conference, especially conferences that are outside your domain. Next time you're in Las Vegas, ask the cabbie for their list of conferences. They all have one. And
that's so funny.
God,
conference crash.
It's freaking great, you guys. Like, you'll be there for CES or whatever, and there's going to be like the actuary convention and the packaging convention and whatever, you know, and it'll be like popular, you know, attendance 1,000, you know, but like there's something fascinating that happens when you wander around another industry's conference. It might have no relevance on your life, but it might be that like some new innovation there is something that could be applied to your business or inspiration for a problem you're trying to solve.
That's a great thing. You know, it's funny. You know how Brent and I met was at the South by Southwest. You know, and it's like you got to get outside yourself. You got to go to conferences. You got to meet people. You know, I knew about this 360 cameras. I saw it at a conference. I mean, you know, the other thing too is you can't be afraid to fail, because guess what? It's going to happen. But you just manage the failure. And then what happens is you'll actually find a new technique or solution for it.
Yeah, that's just so true. And you know, one of my favorite quotes is a Madeleine Engel quote. She says, inspiration comes during work, not before it. You know, it's not that you're just like on the couch and have a light bulb moment. You're like actively engaged in something. And that thing might be a failure, but it was the fact that you like got up, tried to do it, then it was like, whoa, this is terrible. What are we thinking? You know, but if we did it this other way, all of a sudden this is going to work and be awesome. But you wouldn't sort of arrive to that final state without having gone through the failure and the iteration.
One of my favorite quotes, it was actually from that same, if I remember right, the same John Cleese video, where he says that when you have a creative challenge, lean gently but persistently against it. I love that metaphor, right? That it's not something that, and I think it's actually the hardest part about teaching innovation in a university settings, because so often students here and every other place, they like to, you know, they're used to courses where you have to memorize the formula and you pull an all-nighter before the test and you're ready and you do well on the test. And, you know, if your final exam is showing off the product that you developed, that process just doesn't work. And so it's a hard thing to teach. I'll go back to you, Bill. How do you keep your teams kind of focused and directed toward?
I like what you said there, and one of the things that I heard in your comment was patience. And I think it's so easy for all of us to want to charge forward and do it. And I think you always have to keep in mind it's a marathon, not a sprint. And you got to look at the long term. You know, you can't look at this like, I got to solve this week, this weekend. It's a process that you may have to keep continuing to do and look at it from that long-term perspective. And, you know, as a young entrepreneur, it's hard because you want things now. We're in this kind of immediate culture, this immediate undo culture, and you got to just keep going, keep being relentless, keep being resilient. And it's something you have to continue to do. It's a never-ending battle.
Brent, we only have a couple minutes left. Let's take it up a level. What have you learned about creating really compelling experiences for people? What advice would you give to somebody trying to do that?
The thing that has influenced our stuff more than anything else is putting stuff in front of people as fast as possible. So often the stuff that Eric and I are the most excited about ends up being the worst thing. and the thing that, honest to God, is in debug mode and like is the very beginning of a project that just so happens to be like sitting there in the corner and people walk up and they're like, oh my God, this is awesome. And we're like, wait, what? Really? You like that thing? We're not even done with it, you know? And there's just no substitute for engaging as early and often as possible. Don't worry about the graphics. Don't worry about try to get feedback as early as possible. And it forces a lot of things to happen. And things that you wouldn't expect, things sort of tangential or related to the project that you had to solve in order to put it in front of people, that end up being really important, in the development process going forward. Because we're building stuff for out of home in physical settings, we always sort of joke that the best testers are kids and drunks, but they both have these very they both have no tolerance for instructions. They really have a tendency to be pretty violent, and if you want to really sort of stress test something, they will do a very great job.
You're not mixing those two populations, are you, Brent? You're not getting the kids
my
drunk.
Definitely not.
And Bill, we just have 30 seconds. Reflecting on what you've heard from Brent, what do you take away from his perspective on innovation and creating experiences?
I mean, one of the things that I keep hearing over and over again is this concept of play. And I think we can't forget about, you're in business, it's okay to play. And play is all relative. Play is meaning you're having fun, you're working hard, you're open to ideas, and you're not thinking about things that are constricting you at the beginning. You're playing, and at the end of the day, you can actually be successful at that. And I think, you know, sometimes you have to forget the rules, but then also you have to focus after that. And it's constant pendulum of kind of back and forth. And if you keep those in mind, you can be very successful.
We've been talking with Bill Nottingham and Brent Bushnell. Brent is CEO of Two Big Circus. And Brent, I feel like we've just kind of gotten started talking, so I hope we can get you back again. But thanks for coming on Innovation Navigation.
I would love it. Well, hey, thanks so much for having me. It's been great talking with you guys this morning.